Reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
Welcome to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm Brad Bannon. I'm a Democratic strategist, a columnist for The Hill in Washington, D.C., and a political analyst for WGN Radio in Chicago and WKX Radio in Chicago. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democratic candidates. BannonCR.com is the sponsor of today's show. If you want to learn more about me and my political polling company, or if you have any suggestions or comments or ideas for Deadline DC, the best way to reach me on Twitter is Twitter. My Twitter handle is @BradBannon. Welcome to all of you watching me on Twitter or Periscope. Now everyone can watch the show by going to periscope.tv/Brad Bannon. You can also watch Deadline DC on Facebook by using tinyurl.com/BB Facebook Live. Today on Deadline DC, we've only got 8 days to go until the presidential election. So we're going to discuss presidential politics. Sean Zella of Congressional Quarterly joins us in the first half hour. Then it's time for our provocative progressive political panel with Nick Guthman, the founder and CEO of Our Blue Future, and progressive political activist Mark J. Grimaldi. We start today with Sean Keller, who is the deputy managing editor of Congressional Quarterly Magazine. Welcome to the show, Sean. How are you doing today?
It's great to be here, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Let's start later today, apparently around 7 p.m. Eastern time this evening. The U.S. Senate is going to vote to confirm Amy Coney Barrett as an associate justice of the Supreme Court. Confirmation of Justice Barrett will give conservatives on the court a solid 6-3 majority, and there is some concern that the court will quickly act to nullify such prominent laws, rulings as Roe versus Wade and a very important law, the Affordable Care Act. That has raised a lot of discussion about what Joe Biden can do to outmaneuver the court if he's elected president in 8 days. And so for my first question is, do you think Joe Biden will try to take any kind of action to mitigate the conservative majority on the Supreme Court? He could expand the court or try to do something else to mitigate the new conservative majority. What do you think will happen on that front?
I think at first he's going to take his time and see what happens. I don't think Joe Biden wants to go out with both guns blazing right out of the bat. If the court does follow through and overrule some of those decisions that you mentioned, I think he'll have two options. One, he'll consider removing the legislative filibuster in the Senate, which will allow the Senate to pass legislation, for example, to make abortion legal and to repass or fix the Affordable Care Act if the Supreme Court finds problems with it. He could also add justices to the Supreme Court, but he's already said that he doesn't want to do that right out the gate anyway. he'd prefer to study the issue and create a commission that would look at it. So I think, you know, he'll take a wait-and-see posture. He'll see what the Supreme Court does. He'll see what Republicans in the Senate do if they block legislation. And his first move might be the legislative filibuster.
Now, let's say, you know, there's at least some speculation, and I'm not a Supreme Court expert, so I don't know, that the court could nullify the Affordable Care Act and also nullify the court's ruling on abortion in Roe versus Wade. If Joe Biden was going to act, wouldn't it make sense for him to act before the Supreme Court does any of those two things? Otherwise, we'll be sort of closing the barn door after the horse escapes.
I mean, he certainly could. I mean, he could add a Supreme Court. He could remove the legislative filibuster right away and use that new power to add justices to the Supreme Court. But I don't think he's going to do that. I mean, he's already distanced himself from those positions. He's a career senator. He values sort of the institution and the norms of the Senate and the norms of the Supreme Court. And I think his approach will be to wait. Either way, I mean, those changes you mentioned are unlikely to happen soon. The Supreme Court is just beginning, will just be beginning to hear the case regarding the Affordable Care Act. Most of the court watchers that I've listened to indicate that they think it's unlikely that the court will rule against the law in favor of the state attorneys general and the Trump administration that want it overturned. And so, you know, if they do rule against it, it would be the big surprise that would, I think, give him the political justification to move forward with some of those changes that I talked about a moment ago.
Let's say, for the sake of argument, the Democrats do capture a majority in the Senate, and they end up with 53 or 54 senators. Do you think if there were 53 Democratic senators, and the new Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer of New York, decided to end the filibuster rule, could he get, would all the Democrats support the initiative, or is that, even with a Democratic majority, is that going to be a tough sell for Schumer if he becomes Majority Leader to kill the filibuster rule?
Well, it depends on how many senators he has. If he has 53 or 54, it's going to be easier than if he has 50 or 51. But that said, I think taking the wait-and-see posture is what gives the Democrats the political maneuvering room to act in that area. If they proceed right out of the gate under the normal rules and are able to get legislation passed, if they're able to peel off Republican votes and get things done, if the Supreme Court does not proceed with overturning the Affordable Care Act this year, then the case is diminished. But if Republicans in the Senate were to block important legislation, if the Supreme Court were to rule against the Affordable Care Act, then the political momentum may shift towards those who want to eliminate the filibuster. And I suspect that's what'll happen, that they'll wait and see what the Republicans do, what the court does, and if they have the political room to maneuver.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the presidential race. Let's go back and actually review last week's debate. Debate last Thursday night was Donald Trump's last chance to directly confront Joe Biden. For most people felt the president performed better in the debate last week than he did in the first head-to-head matchup against Biden. Do you think the president's performance in the debate last week was enough to take a chunk out of Joe Biden's lead and stop the momentum for Biden victory next week?
the early polls coming out of the debate don't indicate that's the case. The polls still show a wide Biden lead. I think the reason for concern is that, again, that the polls could be wrong, especially in those battleground states where they are closer.
They are.
Where they are more reminiscent of where they were 4 years ago when Trump was facing Hillary Clinton. And that there might be shy Trump voters out there who aren't responsive to pollsters and aren't being counted in those numbers. So I think that's a legitimate concern. I think Democrats are right to be worried about it and right to be proceeding with campaigning in the battlegrounds and pressing their case in the battlegrounds. I think the second debate is not a game changer, but it, the president performed better than certainly he did in the first, where his interruptions and behavior, I think, were pretty widely seen as.
Yeah, I think most people feel that way. We're going to break now. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and our guest, Sean Zella from Congressional Quarterly Magazine. When we return, we'll be with our Periscope TV listeners, viewers. We'll continue. We'll be back with our radio listeners in a couple of minutes. Our guest in this half hour is Sean Zella from Congressional Quarterly Magazine. You were talking about the Senate. Sean, what are the Democratic prospects for taking a majority in the Senate, in your opinion?
They're pretty solid. It looks like the smart money is on them in taking the Senate. Indeed, they have a number of good prospects from defeating Susan Collins in Maine, Cory Gardner in Colorado, Tom Tillis in North Carolina. Just those three at the top of the list. Joni Ernst in Iowa also seems vulnerable. Steve Daines in Montana. So, and of course, Martha McSally in Arizona. Let's not forget her. So they have a lot of pickup opportunities to get those three seats that they'll need if Joe Biden wins the presidential election. They'll need four if he does not. But it seems likely that the two could go hand in hand, that if Trump loses the election, the Democrats will pick up the three seats they need.
Yeah, we should also mention that besides the states we talked about, polls show very close races in at least three states that I know of that Trump decisively won in 2016. That will be Iowa, Georgia, and Texas. Now, I don't know if Biden is going to end up winning any of those three states. He may. Georgia seems like a pretty decent bet, but I think that shows the difficulty that the electoral map presents for Donald Trump, since he's fighting for his life in three states, Iowa, Texas, and Georgia, that he won decisively in 2016. So we'll see. Oh, one thing I want to ask you about, since you cover Congress so closely, Nancy Pelosi announced late last week that she will run for another term as Speaker of the U.S. House if she's reelected, which it looks like she will be, and the Democrats maintain the majority. In fact, some people think the Democrats might actually pick up some House seats. Would there be a move among progressive Democrats from trying to deny Nancy Pelosi the speakership for another 2 years?
No, I don't. No, definitely not. I think that that she reached an agreement 2 years ago when she became speaker for the second time to stay for no more than two terms. So that would, if she retains the speakership in the next Congress, she'll have served those two terms. And that was the deal that she reached with a group of typically younger Democrats in the House that have been frustrated by the sort of feeling that there's not been a lot of change in the Democratic leadership. There are not a lot of young Democrats rising up in those ranks. The three top leaders are all in their 70s and 80s, Jim Clyburn, Steny Hoyer, and Speaker Pelosi herself. But I think she's, the feeling in the caucus is that she's handled herself well, especially this year, that she's held President Trump's feet to the fire when it comes to his handling of the virus. And if she leads the Democrats to a continued majority, which seems likely, or certainly an expanded majority, there's no chance that she will be removed from the speakership. The question will be whether they stick to the agreement of one more term, and then it'll get real interesting in 2022 who the next speaker might be.
Who might emerge as a, you know, Democratic speaker after Nancy Pelosi serving another term?
Well, when you look down the list of the current leaders, the two that stand out who are in leadership right now are Hakeem Jeffries, the New York Democrat, and Catherine Clark, the Massachusetts Democrat, both very ambitious, both the conference chair and the conference vice chair. And I think they would be top contenders, but I'm sure there would be some dark horse candidates from outside of the current leadership.
Now, let's go back to the presidential race to close the half hour. You mentioned that Donald Trump is campaigning very hard. He is, you know, hitting a lot of battleground states, even battleground states he shouldn't be probably having to campaign in, like Georgia. But it seems to me, you know, does Donald Trump have anything up his sleeve? Last week, Rudy Giuliani tried to weigh in on the Hunter Biden story by leaking a story with some tapes of dubious origin about Hunter Biden's business dealings in the Ukraine. Was that the Trump last gaffe, or do you think they have anything? It seems to me they've got to do something in the next 8 days to shake this thing up. Do you think they have anything in mind or anything planned?
Well, they certainly might. I mean, no one saw the Hunter Biden story coming from the New York Post, which ran it, and then the Wall Street Journal op-ed page has picked it up, and the conservative media has picked it up, trying to make the case that Hunter Biden's lobbying career implicates his father in some way, that his father was gained benefit or helped Hunter Biden's clients. And that certainly seems of a piece with the strategy that Trump had in 2016 to try to raise ethical questions about his opponent. At this point, it doesn't seem like it's resonating, but it does seem like a last gasp.
Okay. Now let's look at closing arguments for Joe Biden. What do you expect Joe Biden will do in the next 8 days to solidify his lead?
Well, I think President Biden is sitting on a big cash advantage, and he's going to try to use that up. From what I understand, the battlegrounds are just seeing a ton of Biden advertising. I think Joe Biden's approach has been to demonstrate through his campaign a respect for the virus and the danger that it poses to Americans right now. And I think a majority of Americans, the polls indicate, appreciate that. He's run as a return to normalcy candidate, as a moderate Democrat, as someone who will seek to work across the aisle. And I think that's, I think his campaign thinks that's working.
Yep, well, we'll find out soon. One last question. Do you expect, what about, it seems to me one of the things that's coming up here is that in the late stages of this thing, that the pandemic is coming back to bite the president on the Trump, on the, you know, butt. You know, Mike Pence, two of Mike Pence's aides have tested positive. His chief, Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, yesterday seemed to raise the right white flag in terms of trying to fight the pandemic. That to me is got to be a real problem for the Trump campaign going into the stretch run here.
Yeah, it seems to be killer for him. The consensus is that he has not managed the virus well, that he's had an overly optimistic view of its course. And now it's hit him and his vice president, and it certainly is not helping.
That's it for this segment of Deadline DC. I want to thank our guest, Sean Zella from Congressional Quarterly, for joining us and talking about the presidential race. Deadline DC with Brad Bannon will be back after these messages.
If you miss Leslie on TV this week, catch up at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. In this half hour, we will do our provocative progressive political panel. But before that, let me say a few words. The clock is ticking and Donald Trump is taking a licking. The president's persistent problem is the pandemic plague. He gets bad marks for fighting the COVID-19 outbreak in national and battleground state polls. Trump downplayed the severity of the COVID in last week's presidential debate and said that the U.S. is turning the corner and recovering from the outbreak. The president's callous take on the pandemic was essentially, don't worry about the pandemic. Be happy you're still alive, even though 200,000 of your friends and family have died. After dismissing the severity of the pandemic Thursday night, the president's fantasy collided reality the next day when the Center for Disease Control reported a record high in new coronavirus cases. Saturday, the White House announced that Vice President Mike Pence's chief of staff and his senior political advisor tested positive for COVID. Then on Sunday, the president's own chief of staff, Mark Meadows, contradicted the president's debate optimism when he told CNN's Jake Tapper that we're not going to control the pandemic. If that isn't rolling up, unfurling the white flag, I don't know what is. The administration's failure to keep its own house clear of COVID further undermines the president's credibility in the fight against the plague. Especially when the vice president is chairman of the White House task force responsible for fighting the COVID. The failure of the president and the vice president to keep their own houses in order does nothing to inspire public confidence that his administration could ever win the war against COVID. Now it's time for our provocative progressive political panel. Our guest today on the panel is Nick Guthman, the founder of Our Blue Future, which organizes young Americans to be politically active. Nick's Twitter handle is Nick.Guthman. That's G-U-T-H-M-A-N, Nick.Guthman. Okay, let's start with the presidential race. Nick, there in the national polls, Joe Biden, I think the real clear politics average, I checked yesterday, he had an 8-point lead in the national surveys. Joe Biden seems to lead in the Great Lakes battleground states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Joe Biden is in close races with the president in the Sun Belt battleground states of Arizona, North Carolina, and Florida. Joe Biden is even competitive in three states that Donald Trump decisively won in 2016. Those would be Iowa, Georgia, and Texas. What's your take on the state of the presidential race, Nick?
Well, thank you for having me, Brad, and good to see you, Mark. Over 62 million Americans, as of today, have made their voices heard as voters in our democracy. 62 million, setting a record for early vote numbers, and that's no mistake. That is because of the hard work and dedication of so many grassroots organizations and mobilization to get people prepared to vote safely in this pandemic. Over 62 million people have already casted their ballots. Overwhelmingly, the Democrats have been able to see that turnout be in our favor. It is very, very close in some states in terms of the return, whether Democrats have returned their ballots, whether Republicans have, and things like that. And no matter what the polls are saying and what these encouraging numbers tell us, the truth of the matter is these next 8 days are crucial. And us here at Blue Future, we are focused, laser focused, on making sure we do everything we can to call as many of these voters who have received absentee ballots, make sure they know how to fill it out, make sure they're sending it back on time, dropping it off at the safe drop boxes where appropriate, and making sure that everyone is talking to their friends, talking to their family, especially folks in those key battleground states you mentioned, Brad, to make sure that we get out the vote. And not only get out the vote, but be ready to demand that every single vote is counted and that everyone in our country counts, no exceptions.
Nick, our blue future is charged with revving up young voters to vote this year. Now, in 2016, Hillary Clinton won the support of young voters, was not very good. Are young voters going to turn out in force for Joe Biden this year?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. And again, as I was saying, the early vote numbers are encouraging, especially in some of these states, in Texas, in Florida, in North Carolina, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, where more young people have voted early than ever before, setting records day after day for the early vote numbers. But the message is the same. No matter what, we have to push and push hard these next couple of days and leave it all in the field, organized for every hour of every day, every minute of every hour, to say that in America, we all count, to say that in America, our democracy is sacred, and our vote, as our hero John Lewis said, our vote is precious, and we have to exercise our right to vote. And young people understand that because we have so much at stake. The whole country has so much at stake. Our democracy is at stake. But us as young voters, we have the most at stake, as we will be dealing with the consequences of this election for many, many years to come. That includes this, you know, packing of the court by the Republican Party and Amy Coney Barrett. It includes climate justice and addressing the climate crisis. And so we have so much at stake in this election, and we are organizing day in and day out. And I do believe that when all is said and done, we will see that young voters were a key voting block helping to deliver our democracy for the people of the United States.
I should note for our radio listeners that Nick is wearing his Dodgers cap. The Dodgers, by the way, World Series game five last night. And so they're ahead in the series 3-2. Nick, let me ask, a Democratic House and a Democratic Congress, then the Supreme Court votes to nullify the Supreme standard on abortion, which is the Roe versus Wade decision.
It's an important question to be asking. And if we do our jobs right over the next 8 days, the job that young people and other grassroots progressive organizers have been doing for the last 4 years and well before that to mobilize our communities and turn out to vote in record numbers, if we do our job and we win the Senate, we win the White House, it will be on all of us to uphold and protect our democracy. And currently, this administration not only is rushing through a Supreme Court nominee while they have the HEROES Act, an important, impactful piece of legislation that passed the House to provide relief to millions of Americans, to state and local governments, to teachers, and to make sure that we can get by this and get through this pandemic. That's just sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk as we speak. And yet they're going to rush through the Supreme Court nominee while over 62 million Americans have already cast their vote. It's absolutely ridiculous. We talk about court packing. They keep asking Joe Biden and the Democrats about court packing. Court packing, why don't they take a mirror and look at themselves in that mirror? Who's packing the court now? It's the Republican Party. And so young people are going to be able to stand up and ready and prepared to stand up to protect our democracy and make sure that the fundamental institutions and checks and balances and our nonpartisan courts, right? Our balanced court system.
Okay, we're going to go to break now for our audio, for our radio listeners. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after these messages. For folks watching us on Facebook Live and Periscope TV, we'll be back right away with the Provocative Progressive Political Panel. We are talking to Nick Guttman, founder and executive director of RBU Future, which works with young voters to motivate them to participate in the process. Nick, if Joe Biden wins and the Democrats have majority control of the U.S. Senate, and both are possibilities, I don't think either is a done deal. Things can change a lot in 8 days. But let's say things go the Democratic Party's way, and we do have a Democratic president and Democratic Senate, and of course we'll have a Democratic House. We might even have a bigger House majority than we have now. First of all, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Joe Biden to move quickly to solve a lot of problems at the same time. Do you think the Democrats in the Senate will vote to eliminate the full filibuster rule, which will give the new Democratic majority, if it exists, the opportunity to pass legislation with 51 votes instead of just instead of hoping to get up to 60 to break up a filibuster?
Thank you for the question, Brad. I should also say I'm now the co-executive director. Blue Future has been expanding in this most important election year. We have a co-director, Morgan Starr, who's just invaluable to our team. But to your question about what Democrats will do, my guess is as good as yours. But here's what I do know the Democrats will do. The Democrats will pass meaningful legislation. We'll talk about the issues that Americans are facing regarding the economy, regarding healthcare, making sure more people have access to healthcare, not less. Making sure we do something about the environment and start to take it seriously before it's too late to address the climate crisis. Make sure we pass legislation like the justice, you know, people on Facebook, on social media, on other platforms, and make sure that people go out as voters and show that in America, we're going to deliver our democracy and elect and inaugurate and swear in a new government of and by and for us.
Okay, Nick, what do you think Joe Biden should say to seal the deal in the next 8 days?
I think he's said it. I mean, he has shown who he is, his character. As he said in the debate, America knows me, I know America, and America knows Trump and who he is. You know, again, our character is on the ballot, and in our national leadership, it's time for change. It is time for change. It's time to restore people's faith in the institution of democracy. While Donald Trump is literally running an all-out assault and a campaign against democracy itself. He's not running against Joe Biden. He's running against democracy. He's running against our fundamental right to vote. And so Joe Biden needs to make that case a little bit stronger. The reason it's so hard, the reason all this voter suppression is happening is because it's a strategy. Because Donald Trump knows, Donald Trump and the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell and all the rest know that if everyone has the right to vote, if everyone makes their vote heard, they have no chance at all. So we got to get out there and be voters all together, from small towns to big cities, black, white, native, newcomer. We're going to go out in record numbers and deliver our democracy.
Okay, that's it today for Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Remember, we'll be back next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern time for our Election Eve special, which should be pretty interesting as we talk about the last few hours of the presidential race next week. I want to thank our guest, Sean Zella from Congressional Quarterly Magazine, and Nick Guttman of Our Blue Future. I want to thank our producer, Mark Grimaldi. I'm here Mondays at 3 p.m. If the Lord is willing, the creek don't rise, and if Donald Trump doesn't declare martial law. This is Brad Bannon. Stay strong, stay safe, and don't drink the Clorox or the Kool-Aid. It didn't help the president, and it won't help you either. And most important, remember, vote early, but don't vote often. That can get you into serious legal trouble. Anyway, we'll be back with our special Election Eve special next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure you vote if you can early, and encourage your friends to vote early and on Election Day.